This is a Collider.com audio interview.
You played in the sequel to American Psycho.
Oh, my God. Really? You're the third question today about this. Do we have to?
I'm just saying, people look at you. I mean, they see a real bad person there somewhere. I don't know.
It's two movies in a 17-year-long career. It's not that bad.
Well, Jackie was kind of, you know, she...
She never stole.
That's true.
She was just slightly conniving. Self-obsessed, you can say.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Ringo used to say it's just me face, you know, and somebody would say, why are you so
Are bad? You trying to say that I look like I can be a pathological liar who's also a kleptomaniac?
Someone must think so. They cast you.
Possibly.
Well, I didn't cast
you. Mike Judge. No, you know what? I don't know. I don't know. You know what? I thought the script was really funny. I thought the character was really funny. Very possible I could look like a kleptomaniac, pathological liar, and hence why I keep getting hired.
So you didn't do any research, like, you know, Winona Ryder style?
I knew that's where you were going with this one. I did not do any research. Nope, didn't feel like I needed to go method for this one, because then I'd be in jail, and then Nancy Ryder would kill me.
Maybe this is where Jackie would have ended up if she had not had a good family.
Jackie did not have a good family. Did you ever watch the show, girl? Dad, her mom was in Cancun. Her dad was in jail.
What money.
That does not constitute a good family. Having money
you're right. I meant rich family.
There you go. If Jackie was poor, here's the difference. Not quite sure Jackie would have ever been smart enough to get away. Like, I think she would have been caught much earlier in her life. I think Cindy has a tendency to be, like, a couple steps ahead. And so she's able to kind of keep going with this process of, you know, manipulating people. I think Jackie, I don't know, it's hard to say. I don't think she was ever, you know, the sharpest tool in the shed.
Was this, because the offer came, like, from Mike Judge, was it like, yes, Mike Judge, yes? Or was it something specific about this particular role that you said?
Mike Judge, yes.
Yeah.
It was Mike Judge, yes.
Yep. Well, I was going to say that you made the successful transition to the big screen from a very successful TV show. It's very rare for people to make that jump. You know, could you talk about how the career has shifted for you and, you know, what it's like?
Well, thank you. I don't know how this happened. I will tell you, I did not think it was going to happen. I wanted to quit the industry when I was 18. And finish my contract off with 70s, and go to college. Because I was pretty convinced that after 70s of doing a show for 8 years, I would be very much in a, you know, pigeonholed for something specific that I didn't want to be a part of anymore. And so my attempt at college failed miserably, and I dropped out, and decided that this is what I wanted to do for a living. And when I made that decision, I had to convince myself to disassociate myself from the industry. That makes any sense? To be who I am and have this be just what I do, and the paths could never cross. Because if they did, I think that given after 70s, there was like a good year of just pure rejection. And if I didn't disassociate myself from what I did, I would probably go through depression, I would assume, or go through, you know, some hard times, but I didn't. And I always had other things that were more important to me. I had family that was more important, I had my life that was more important, I had hobbies that were more important, and this was just my job. And then I think once I got in that mindset and I was okay with that, I was like, you know what, it's fine. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. This is not the end-all to be-all. And met with Judd Apatow, and Sarah Marshall came about, and that was great. And I think that's what kind of started slowly changing everything. But I think that most importantly, it ended up having to become a mindset of this is what I do. This is not who I am.
How did college fail miserably? What did you take?
That was the problem. I didn't know. I went to college because I felt like I was supposed to, and I went. You know, I graduated public high school. I did all the things I was supposed to do.
What school did you go to?
Which high school did I go to?
No, which college?
I took two classes at UCLA, and then I transferred to Loyola Marymount, and that became my college. And then I'm pretty damn sure I never went to class in Loyola. That was, you know, I'm trying to think back 8 years.
That could be the problem why you failed out.
It's very possible. I didn't fail out.
Okay.
I dropped out. Uh-huh. I did not fail. I was actually a pretty good student. My problem was I didn't know what I wanted to study. What was I going to go in? Undecided. UCLA didn't provide undecided. So I think I took a class on AIDS, and then I took a class on the Zionist theory. Like, I took classes that interested me but weren't necessarily for a specific degree. And then I realized, and I spoke to my parents, I was like, you know what, I do love what I do, and I want to pursue it. And they were like, ah, fine, just drop out.
Now, when you came to the United States as a young child, you spoke no English. Do you remember what it was like learning the English language and how you went about doing that?
I really don't. I got to tell you, I came in second grade. I would say by third grade, I spoke pretty fluent English. I don't remember much of second grade. I've said this before. I was not a traumatized kid, by all means, the way this might come out. But I pretty much blocked out all of second grade in the States. I'm guessing because it was hard. My parents said that I came home crying every night. But I don't remember it. So, it must, you know, I think that it was rough because I just didn't know where I was. I didn't get the culture. I didn't get the people. I'll be honest, I've never... I met an African-American person for the first time in my life when I was 7. Didn't know that they even existed. Didn't know there were other people of different color. Didn't even know people with red hair existed. It wasn't because, you know, I wasn't taught that in school. It's just that it just wasn't where I grew up. Right. And so much of it was, forget the language barrier, it was just a culture shock. And I think adapting to the culture was much harder than actually learning the language.
Mm-hmm. What hobbies were you, or do you pursue that are more important than acting?
Life. Like everything.
Life is a hobby?
I think so. Living life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do view it as that. Like, I enjoy living life, and, like, I enjoy going to different restaurants and, you know, eating my way through a country and going to different museums and learning about different cultures, and that, to me, is so much more fulfilling.
Can you talk about, you went to Comic-Con for 2 films this year.
Yes.
And what was your experience like going, and did you walk the convention floor? Did you buy anything?
I did walk the convention floor, and I sent my brother off to buy me stuff. Yeah, Comic-Con was really fun this year.
Two movies and a television series.
My bad, 3 things at Comic-Con.
Oh,
I'm very sorry.
Excuse you, sir.
I'm sorry, I just...
Jet doesn't usually make jet lag.
It's jet lag, I'm sorry.
Bring me up to speed.
Family Guy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it was Extract, Book of Eli, Family Guy, Nancy Ryder.
I forgot you were promoting Family Guy there.
How dare you forget?
Next question, though, was about Family Guy.
No, please, it's fine. It was fun. I went on the floor. I went on the floor differently than I'm used to going on the floor. I had to go on the floor with a lot of extra help, which I was not that much fun, I'm going to tell you right now. Going on the floor by yourself, super fun. Like, you get to walk around, you get to see the booths, what everyone's promoting, what the new toys are. Like, everybody has a special Comic-Con series toy. That did not happen this year. I didn't have enough time. So I went with the slew. Oh, yeah. Oh, you brought it.
Show and tell.
So, Extract booth at Comic-Con had Mila lookalikes. Mm-hmm. And I heard about this from Ben Lines from E! So he interviewed me and he was like, did you know there were Mila Kunis lookalikes? And I was like, there were? He's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, I need to go meet them. So that's when I went downstairs. I went with my brother, who totally was hitting on one of the Mila Kunis lookalikes, which was really freaky.
No.
I'm telling you, really weird. She was a short one. There was like a giant Mila Kunis lookalike who was like 6 feet tall. There was like a shorter one. I mean, it was all, you know, they didn't really look like me, but they did because they had dark hair. And one was adorable and super cute. My brother's like, that's the hot one. And I was like, you're gross. But he went for it. But anyway, so yesterday, Ben Lines gave me this. And that's him with the Mila Kunis lookalikes.
That's funny.
And that's what I went down to the floor on. I can't believe you brought this. I feel like it's a show and tell. Everybody?
Well, you're showing that I heard a lot of actors, what they do at Comic-Con is to be incognito. They'll put on a mask or do a costume, and then they're by themselves.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't have time. That was the problem. I've done that. And that's the best way to go through Comic-Con, because you can really go through Comic-Con. And there were some limited edition toys that I wanted to buy, action figures.
Oh, you do have to say which ones these were.
There was one for Halo, and it was the Red versus Blue, the Rooster Team one. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah, never got around to that booth. The problem.
I think the other movie was The Book of Eli?
Yes.
I wasn't there. Can you tell me something about that?
About Book of Eli or Book of Eli's Comic-Con trip? Book of Eli? Okay. Yeah. So, Book of Eli. Book of Eli is Denzel Washington, Gary Oldman, and the Hughes Brothers directed it.
Yeah.
It's a post-apocalyptic thriller. Where maybe not so much thriller, just post-apocalyptic. And Denzel Washington's character has a book, and he's called the Walker in the film. And he has to get the book, you know, to a specific location. That is his purpose in life, is to get this book to a specific location. Throughout this journey, he meets my character and Gary Oldman's character, who plays my stepfather, who's not the nicest man, to say the least. And my character decides to run away with Denzel Washington's character because she's inspired by him, not at all sexually and not in a you know, romantic sort of way, but just, you know, inspired by what he believes in and inspired by him. And she's never really met a man in this world that was like him, and goes on this journey with him.
And then that was, well, then now tell us about the Comic-Con experience involving that movie.
Well, I'll tell you, all I'll say is neither Denzel nor Gary Oldman have ever been at Comic-Con, and that was their first experience. And so experiencing Comic-Con with these two major movie stars was kind of awesome.
Gary Oldman must have had quite the trip.
He was great. Gary and I ended up just kind of teaming up and doing press together because Gary just makes me laugh all the time. And he's much funnier than people ever. And, like, people don't understand how funny, truly funny Gary Oldman is. And so he just makes me giggle all day long. So I had a great time at Comic-Con with him because we were just pointing. And he was, we were walking from the hotel to the convention center and we walked past, you know, like Wonder Woman and all these people. And he was like, who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Like, he was just so wanted to know everything about who all these people were. It was kind of great.
The internet is abuzz with this Black Swan project. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about when you're doing this? Is this thing a go?
I can talk about it. Yes, it is a go. I'm starting production in November, and for the past, well, we started a month ago ballet training, and so I have 2 more months of training before choreography begins, and we start actual production in November in New York City.
And it's you and Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
A lot of people, and I don't know if this is true or not true, but there's been a lot in the last week about you two having some interesting scenes together.
Yes, yes. I have heard about this from everybody. I mean, something got out. Yeah. Here's what I don't fully understand, and I'll answer this question, is the script is so under lock and key that I can't imagine anyone really, truly ever getting a hold of it.
So you're denying the story that's online?
I can't really deny or confirm because I'm not allowed to talk about the script. Uh-huh. But all I'm going to say is I can't imagine anyone getting their hands on this project. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Is there a reason for the high level of secrecy to the project?
It's a psychological thriller. So there is a lot of, twists and turns, I guess you could say. And I think Darren Aronofsky is directing it, is a very... He just did the last rewrite on it, and he's very private about this one rewrite. So I don't know how anybody could have ever gotten it. I have a copy, but mine's so watermarked that you would know it came from me. Natalie has a copy, and I'm guessing, let's say, 2 more out there.
So you're saying that there's like a... So you just got a recent rewrite.
I just got a recent rewrite last week, yeah.
Well, just to ask this question, is the rewrite you just got a lot different than, say, a previous version, or is it just like sort of tweaks?
I can't say. I can't. I mean, I'm going to get in trouble. I would love to tell you, and the day that I'm able to tell you the story, I will be so happy to. But I can't. The rewrite, I can't even say.
Well, how long is the filming process?
On this, we're doing ballet training for a couple months, and then we start, see, November. What is it? November we start? Mm-hmm. So November, December, January. So 3 months.
Have you had that kind of training before, any kind of dance?
No.
Sort of thing? Are you freaking out? Looks like maybe you're a little freaked out about
30. Well, I've been a month doing it. Am I freaked out? Absolutely. It's not what you think it's going to be. Whew. It's 7 days a week on an average of 4 hours a day. And you contort your body. I mean, it's one of those things where nothing that you do is natural in ballet. Not a single movement, not your body posture, not your stance. My bones are all cracked. I've torn ligaments. It's, if you look at your hips are placed like this. My hips are now turned around like this. It's just, you have no choice. Everything's tucked. Like my shoulder, look at that muscle. That never existed. So there's that, I sit like this. I normally slouch. Now I'm forced to sit with my shoulders tucked back, with my back. It's the bizarre, it's so weird and so uncomfortable and unnatural and it hurts. Yes, it's hard.
So you won't be adopting that for life.
Oh,
it's like...
No. I mean, it is an amazing workout. I will say, as far as a full body workout goes, it's insane and very intense. But boy, do I have more respect for ballerinas than I ever have in my entire life.
So after going through the ballet training, and so maybe next season we'll see you very quickly volunteering for Dancing with the Stars, get all the dancing out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Nancy, sign me up.
We're booking you.
Yeah. Because I don't have anything to do right now. I'm going to go
That's
dancing
right.
with the stars.
That's it.
Could you and Mike relate a bit? Because when we listen to both of you, we're also listening to famous voices that talk about King of the Hill and how people have listened to him. And even when he was doing Beavis and Butthead, he would cough and people would recognize that voice. Mm-hmm. Did you talk a little bit about that with him, the fact that the two of you have that in common?
No, we didn't really talk about it. No, we never know.
Mm-mm. You never talked about either show, King of the Hill or Family Guy?
Only in like a very professional way, in the sense of like, how's production going? Mm-hmm. But not anything of I went through this. Can you relate to that?
Yeah.
That was never...
Mm-mm. Do you still do stuff on Robot Chicken?
Yeah, well, one of my best friends is the creator of Robot Chicken. To me, Robot Chicken's not work, if that makes sense, at all. Like, to see Robot Chicken come together, you have to understand, I've known about this show since I was 16. Like, it has come through so many forms, and at one point Seth Green had it on the internet, and at one point it was this and that, and I've just seen it completely grow into something so amazing, and I could not be more proud of him. But when the show ended up taking off, I made a bet with him that if it ever gets on the air, I want to be on it. Whether, you know, you have to put me in it, just like as a friend.
Because when you guys did Montreal the last time, I talked to you and Seth together, and they told me about the credits thing, and now I always freeze it to look and see what you and maybe
so
Seth
that was
Michelle
one of the bets. Yes, yeah, Sarah Michelle Gellar and I were, before the show even got onto, you know, Adult Swim, this is like in its beginning stages, she and I were like, if the show ever gets in the air, we want a credit in every single episode.
And you do.
And we do.
Do you have any plot lines you can tease from Family Guy that are coming up?
Mm-hmm. We're a year ahead of you, so hold on. This is a little rough for me. What you're about to see, we wrapped a year ago.
Okay,
so there is an episode, there's an abortion episode that's coming out on DVD that I think is absolutely brilliant that was never allowed to air on network television. And it is absolutely hysterical and one of my favorite episodes. That's coming out on DVD. And it's all about Lois maybe getting an abortion, maybe not. And then there's another episode where Meg goes to jail and comes back a very different person. And that's a very funny episode. Like, funny different. Not quite man different, but in that, towards that direction different. And let me think. There's a couple of really great. I think those are the only two that I can think that I know for a fact are coming out this season.
You're talking about your career and how the various things that you've done, but you didn't talk really about the fact that you've always had this job.
It's an amazing job.
So it must be nice to have that kind of, that idea that you, there always is something there. I mean, there is.
It's like a safety net. It's a huge safety net, Family Guy. I can go on and on. Family Guy to me is not, it's not a job. Family Guy to me is a luxury that I have in my life that I hope goes on for a very long time.
You have another film that we haven't talked about yet called Date Night.
Yes. So what are you getting all your information from? What you doing over there? He's smart. You're totally sharp.
I have the always accurate IMDb up.
Oh, yeah, the always accurate.
It's accurate to the day. I mean,
absolutely.
You're never rumored to other projects. but seriously, about Date Night, can you talk about your character and what it's about?
Sure. Okay, so Date Night is a movie about Tina Fey and Steve Carell, and they go on a date in Manhattan, and then they start, you know, hilarity ensues when they start getting chased by the mob. And in this process of being chased by the mob, they encounter funny characters, and it's all cameos. And so James Franco and I play husband and wife, and I'm a stripper, and he's my husband slash pimp. And they encounter us at home. So, like, after I finish stripping for the day, I come home, and Tina Fey and Steve Carell break into our house.
What was that like? Tina Fey and Steve Carell are like, it's like the 1-2 punch right now.
I cannot explain to you how many times I laughed. In those 2.5 days that I was there, I don't ever remember laughing more. I screwed up so many takes because I could not stop laughing. Steve Carell, looking at him, just makes me laugh. I, huge fan of Steve Carell and Tina Fey for years. So James and I are in this one scene, and it's just James and I and Steve Carell for 2.5 days. And him and I both were like, like just like little kids in a candy store, just mesmerized by these two actors because truly they are so brilliant to watch. Because every take's different. I mean, they're very much into improv. And so you got to keep up. Oh, and I'll tell you. So in one take, so it's all improv, and Steve, Sean Levy, who directed it, was like, you know, do two takes like as on paper and then go off the paper and do whatever you want to do. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So I'm like, oh, I got to be funny. So I was so nervous. Anyways, we did it off the paper, and I made Steve Carell break. And when I made Steve Carell break, I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm so done. I never need to do anything ever again in my entire life. And when Tina Fey was like, that was really funny, ad-lib. I was like, it was? Okay. And I felt so relieved. I don't know. It was insane.
You're kind of in this career sweet spot right now.
Yeah.
And you, what do you think kind of turned that corner and got you there? And it sounds like maybe comedy is where your heart still is, even though you're getting these other opportunities as well.
Comedy is very hard. I don't know if it's what my heart necessarily is, but doing comedy is one of those things where if something's funny right now, does not necessarily mean it's going to sustain a year in production and be funny when the movie comes out. And to me, that's the hardest thing. And I love playing different characters, and I love doing fun things, and I love to entertain people, whether that be in a comedy or a drama. If I get you to laugh or if I get you to cry, I'm super stoked, as morbid as that may sound. I don't know how I got very lucky, but I did. And I think that after 70s, you know, Sarah Marshall's really what did it, I would say. Sarah Marshall took a nice sweet turn from it.
I know that you're obviously, Black Swan's going to take up a lot of time, but are you already thinking about next year? And are you already looking at scripts?
I don't really have time. Because Book of Eli is coming out in January, and so Black Swan and Book of Eli are going to overlap with each other, so I can't even... Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be, I don't think I have time. Like, up until, I would say, March of next year, I don't think I'm going to,
Thank you.
You made us laugh, so next time we do one of these...
I'm going to make you cry. I'll just start cutting myself, everyone's throat.